Les colloques du Collège de France.
So I'm very honored to be here to present this talk on lunar seismology. So I want to associate to this talk this team of scientists which gathered 8 years ago now to try to make a review of lunar seismology. So some of them are in the room, so you recognize Philippe here. Tilio will speak later. And we even had a former PI of Apollo Seismology Experiments, which is Yoshio Nakamura in this team. And I thank him for contributing to this work. I'll skip the outline. So Apollo seismological heritage is very strong. So basically during the Apollo missions, almost each mission deployed seismometers. There was 4 seismometers permanent deployed during that operated during more than 7 years. These were Apollo 12, 14, 15, and 16. And there was also 3 active experiments based on geophones, so short period sensors, that recorded during a few months. So these data were processed during more than 5 decades now, and so they constrained a lot the seismicity and the impacts on the moon, obviously, but also the internal structure of the moon. So you have here pictures of these famous long period seismometers. So just to let you know that now we are no more able to produce these seismometers because they were in pure beryllium, which is a very toxic material. So it would not be allowed now. So the sensors were very good, but it was the first A2D electronics. So the records were suffering for this bit noise. So you recognize all the bits of conversion to analog to digital electronics. However, they probed a lot the seismicity, so the big discovery were the discovery of these deep quakes at the base of the moon lithosphere, so in between 800 and 1,200 kilometers depth in the moon. But you have to understand that usually when you're on Earth, when you record a signal, it's a background of seismic waves because you have a lot of excitation by the oceans that are generating continuously seismic waves. We did not record this on the moon because this background of seismic waves is below the noise of these Apollo sensors. So basically, moon seismology is a very low amplitude seismic signals, even lower than on Mars, I would say, and very low seismic attenuation, meaning that the waves they propagate a long time because they are not attenuated. But we have also a very high scattering of the medium, so the records does not look at all like what we observe on Earth or Mars. So you have this long coda here. The scale is in minutes, so it can last during 2 hours after a moonquake. So as Philippe has done, we are used to present the results in P wave velocity, S wave velocity, and density as a function of depth. So these are 1D models. And we tried to gather all the 1D models that were published at that time. You can see already on this figure that the authors more or less they agree on the mantle structure and the seismic velocity and density. But there is no really agreement on the crustal thickness. And obviously at the base of the mantle and for the core, we still have a lot of debate what are the structures. So I will detail a bit all these results from Apollo data and then discuss more recent developments. So we'll start from the very top. So when you land, below your feet you have the regolith. And these regolith properties were determined by small scale networks. So I cite here a more recent study that used the method of noise correlation on the moon. And so they determined that the first 10 meters below the sensor. So what we can say for the for the fine grain regolith, is that it's about 5 to 10 meters thick. It's really unconsolidated. It's very low seismic velocities. It's very difficult to reproduce this on Earth. You can also, by looking on how these velocities vary during the day, during the lunar day, determine what is the thermal conductivity of the medium. And this regolith is also a very good thermal insulator. It has a very low thermal conductivity. That's why, by the way, we think that the first resource to exploit on the moon is this fine-grained regolith, mainly to build blocks or to insulate bases or things like that. About the crustal structure, there is no real agreement on the crustal thickness. However, a crustal layering is present in all models. So why we have difficulties to determine the crust structure? It's mainly due to the high scattering in the crust. So when seismic waves arrived on the crust, they are scattered by a lot of different scatters. So it's very difficult to use the method we deployed on Earth, like receiver functions or S-wave splitting, because these coherent phase arrival may be broken by the scattering. Also, it's clear that we have a very high variability of seismic parameters between seismic stations, so it's difficult to infer a 1D model because the structure below the different seismic stations are very different, probably. About the seismic attenuation, meaning how many energy is losing a seismic wave when it propagates, we have a limited frequency range with the Apollo data. However, all the models, whatever the method, suggest that we have a very low seismic attenuation. And probably it means that we have a quite dry crust and mantle, so we don't have minerals hydrated in the mantle, probably. About seismic scattering, so this is a big point of the moon. We have a very strong scattering, so you see again what occurs after an impact or shallow moon quake. And so these codas can last, here's the time in seconds, so you have only 1 hour, but you can last at least 2 hours, okay? And what you notice is that for deep moon quake, the coda is the duration is less, meaning that if you come from below, you see the crust only once, and so you're less scattered, whereas if you come from top, you see the crust when going down and when going up, so you have more scattering. So that's why we think that the scattering is mainly on the crust, however, this scattering can extend down to probably up to 100 kilometer depth, so it where you're no more in the crust, but you may have scattering also generated in the mantle. We think that most of the scattering is generated by impact, so the impact broke the crust, but maybe we have also some scattering due to volcanic intrusions inside and around the PKT region. About the mantle structure, so as you've seen, we have an overall agreement on densities. So these latest models, they suggest that you may have a low velocity layer in the mantle, and to generate this, you need high thermal gradient. So this is the value we determine during this EC team exercise. And this is the value determined by modeling from Lanneville. Because most of the stations are in the PKT region or close to the PKT region, these values are somehow consistent of what is expected in the PKT region. We have obviously a huge lithosphere on the moon, and at the base of the mantle, the models they suggest a seismic velocity decrease. However, we have large uncertainties below 1,200 km depth. There is a debate at the base of the mantle because you can explain this structure differently. So the observations are that the P waves they are slightly delayed respective to constant velocity at the base of the mantle. The S wave they present large delays, but we think that we have also outliers in these S wave measurements. And we know that the Love numbers require a more soft layer at the base of the mantle in order to explain how the Earth tidal waves are dissipated inside the moon. So melt or no melt at the base of the mantle. So for pros for melt is that we have very low S-wave velocities, but cons is that maybe we have some outliers in our data. So the in pros, the Love numbers, they require a soft material, but in cones, maybe some other rheogeological models can explain the Love numbers without melt. And last thing is that because we don't see S-wave at large distance, we need probably a strong attenuation at the base of the mantle. But so this is a pros for melt at the base of the mantle, but cones, maybe we can create also this by a core shadow zone. So basically, you have two types of models that currently can explain the fact these S-waves arrivals. Either you have melt at the base of the mantle, and so the S-waves they are attenuated, and you create a shadow zone at the base of the mantle. Or you have a large core, and if you have a large core, you diffract the S-wave, and you kind of reproduce the same effect on the S-wave arrivals at large distances. So for now, this remain underdetermined. So if we continue to go deep, so these are these models at the base of the mantle that we just discussed. So you see that most of the model, they require the velocity to decrease for both P and S. And the core radius, it has been determined in between 230 and 400 kilometers inside the moon. So you see also that the core models, they don't fit the radius, but also some of them suggest structure inside the core, which remain to be probed. Okay, so all these investigations were up to 2019, more or less. What happened since 2019? So we know that we will have new seismic deployment on the moon. So we had new teams in France, US, China, Japan, India, that were processing again the Apollo records. So I will not cover the whole bibliography, but I will focus more on the crust structure, because this is where we have a large underdetermination. So various authors investigated the crust by different methods. First, you have these receiver functions that Philippe described in his previous talk, but you have also what is called the S-wave splitting, which is an expression of the anisotropy inside the mantle and the crust. There is various works trying to use these methods. I think what was produced interestingly in this direction is the work by Shi et al., both in 2023 and 2025. Where he tried to investigate how much the crust cell scattering can break this method. If we have too much scattering, is it breaking all these methods that we are using successfully on Earth and Mars? So I provide here two examples of figures where you can see what is called the P receiver function on Earth computed for different size of the window selecting the P wave. The same for Mars and the same for the Moon. What you notice on these figures is that Earth and Mars, they are not so different, the results, depending on the size you choose for selecting the P wave. But the Moon, you have a large variability. If you choose a different window for the P wave, you produce a totally different receiver function, so different crust structure. So this is probably due to scattering, and recently they also published a paper where they studied the S-wave anisotropy, but they were getting a different or inconsistent results. For example, you process deep moon quakes approximately from the same region, recorded at the same station, you should have the same S-wave anisotropy. They were not producing the same S-wave anisotropy, so they think that the scattering can mimic the X-wave splitting, and we should take care of that. So it's not really positive for these methods that all the seismologists are using on Earth successfully, because we think that the scattering can break all these methods. So it's not very positive. Other methods were used, travel time. These methods were a bit less sensitive to scattering because when you measure the first arrival, you're less sensitive to the scattering in the crust. So this paper, this recent paper by Zhang et al. Estimated the structure of the crust below impact and below station. It's a method similar to what was done by Chenet et al. 20 years before, but with new constraints coming from the gravity field. And basically, the result of this paper is that it favors average crustal thickness around 43 kilometers. So this is at the upper end of what gravity models produce. So it tends to favor, let's say, thicker crust than was previously thought. Latest method is seismic interferometry. So here my student Arnaud used the autocorrelation of Moon CODA. And so we applied this method to different stations. You have the result for, so what you see here is the autocorrelation records as a function of lag time in the autocorrelation for different stations, Apollo 12, Apollo 16, Apollo 15, by using many different CODAs. If you have signals late in the CODA, it is interpreted as waves coming from the receiver, reflected on the discontinuity, and back to the receiver. Okay. What you can see is that we have very different results for the different stations. So how we interpret these figures is that probably for Apollo 15 and Apollo 12, we don't see any coherent arrival in the CODA because there is too much scattering. Okay, the scattering is dispersing all the wave, and we don't see these waves reflected on in discontinuities of the crust. However, in station 16, we see some arrivals. And these arrivals have a good signal-to-noise ratio, so we try to interpret these arrivals. But what this figure suggests is that maybe you have less scattering in the highlands than in the marais. And this is a bit counterintuitive because in the highlands we see a lot of topography. So what we see from the surface looks much more heterogeneous in the highlands than in the marais. In order to explain this, maybe you have to say that maybe we have intrusions, volcanic intrusions. The scale probed at 0.4 Hertz is around 1-2 kilometer scale of scatterers. Maybe the scattering at this frequency is higher in the marais because of volcanic intrusions and lower in the highlands because you don't have these volcanic intrusions in the highlands. Okay, obviously I did not wrote this here because it's not demonstrated, but this would be my interpretation. Okay, from these arrivals at Apollo 16, we constructed a moon model, a moon internal structure models, and we associate these discontinuities, here the mid-cross discontinuity around 20 kilometers, to these arrivals on the P-wave receiver function, on the vertical autocorrelation function and horizontal autocorrelation. They don't arrive at the same time because here we interpret this as a P-wave, here as an S-wave. Then we think that we detected the bottom of the crust with these green arrivals here on the P waves and on the S waves. And so we constructed a model. And what is very surprising in this model is that it's very consistent with the P and S waves detected by Goins in 1981. He produced a totally different crustal model because he was using larger seismic velocities, but the arrival times, they are very consistent. Okay, so again, this is suggesting that we have less scattering below Apollo 16 station, which is in the island. If Goins in 1981 were able to detect and interpret these coherent phases, it means that we have less scattering below this station. However, this model is still underdetermined because we don't have a good idea of what seismic velocities we should choose. And if we change the seismic velocity, we change the depth of the interface. Okay. But these models, again, they favor a thick crust, a crustal thickness below Apollo 16 of about 53 kilometers. So I did not provide a slide on this, but since 2019, there was also a large work done by some Japanese colleague, Dr. Nodera, on referencing, but also on the US side, on referencing these thermal cracks on the moon. And they demonstrated, for example, that the lunar module was generating a lot of thermal cracks, even if the station is 100 or 200 meters away. And there was also a work trying to reference also more these deep moon quakes or the seismicity detected by geophones of the Apollo 17 mission. So we can discuss also what additional constraints, in addition to seismology, we can bring on the structure of the moon. Of course, we have this gravity field from the GRAIL mission, so we know better the gravity field of the moon than the one of the Earth. Sorry about that, but we don't have atmosphere on the moon, so we can fly at a very low altitude, so we know better the gravity field of the moon. These models were interpreted in terms of crust density and crustal thickness, but what is really missing is a seismic anchor point to anchor this model on a real crustal thickness. So this is what seismologists are trying to provide. Also, a big surprise, this was not really a surprise, but is the level of porosity that has been inferred in the crust from this gravity model. So it appears that the crust is very, very porous, and this porosity can then extend quite deep, down to about 50 kilometers, so maybe as deep as the mantle on the moon. Of course, we have this rotation dynamics constraint. So I recall that for now, the only French instrument on the surface of the moon is this laser retroreflector on the Russian Lunokhod missions. Okay. And you see that how the noise level of these measurements decrease from the 70s to now. So now they are below 1 centimeter on the determination of the position of the moon with this laser experiment. And I want to point this study by Vishwanathan because he tried to explain what is the oblateness, so the shape of the core mantle interface, by using a lunar laser ranging and by using the gravity field extracted from GRACE. And so like this, by comparing these two measures, they were able to say that the core size or the mantle fluid boundary, as explained, because the problem we had on Mars, maybe we have it also on the moon, we interpret reflection on solid fluid surface as top of the core, maybe we also have a basal mantle layer on the moon. So it's probably better to say a mantle fluid discontinuity than the core. So they determined a core size of about 380 kilometers by using this method. Even more news on heat flow, because Apollo deployments were tried to determine the heat flow of the moon. Okay, so there was a lot of debate on these measurements because some were lost. There was a debate on compaction of the ground due to Apollo feet, Apollo astronaut feet. However, on the first successful CLPS mission, Blue Origin, CLPS-8, there was a heat flow experiment. So the principle of this sensor is totally different. It's blowing air to go down. So you enter a pin, and then you blow air and you remove the regolith and then you go down. So this experiment provided its first result this year. And what is really surprising is that heat flow values measured in Mare Crisium by this experiment are very close to the one measured by the Apollo 7 on the Apollo 17 site. So they obtained 13 to 14 milliwatt per square meter, whereas Apollo 17 was 16. So it's kind of confirming also that the Apollo measurements were quite good already at that time. Last, EM sounding, electromagnetic sounding. So by measuring how the magnetic field or the electric field is penetrating on the moon, you can try to determine the conductivity profile inside the moon. So this was done by Apollo measurements. And also on this same mission, CLPS-8, there was this experiment, Lunar Magnetotelluric Sounder. So they estimated what is the conductivity, electrical conductivity profile inside the moon. And when they interpret this in terms of temperature, the temperature difference in between Apollo 12, which is in the PKT region, and Mare Crisium is not as large as expected. Okay. And so they formulated a new interpretation of the PKT anomaly. So you know that on the moon, where we have the mare, we had a large volcanism, but we detect also a large amount of radiogenic element. Okay. So what is currently admitted is that because there was this radiogenic element, it generated the volcanism and it generated the mare. Their interpretation is that this radiogenic element layer is everywhere, and we see it at the surface only because there was volcanism there. So it's kind of reversing the PKT anomaly story. PKT is not driven by radiogenic anomaly, but the reverse. We see the radiogenic anomalies because there was volcanism there. This is their interpretation. So it's kind of a new result too. What are the remaining open questions? Okay. So in fact, despite these great measurements and great studies with these measurements, we still have a lot of uncertainties. So in particular, as you've seen, the crustal thickness, but also the far side seismicity. So we don't detect any far side deep moon quake. Do we have partial melt at the base of the mantle? What is the background seismic noise? We don't know. And so Farsight Seismic Suite will try to answer to all these questions. Okay. Then we also have questions about lateral heterogeneities. There is a lot of work ongoing. I think that Chinese team currently are on the way to produce papers trying to demonstrate that we have a lateral heterogeneities also in the mantle of the moon. We have questions about subsurface ice. But this is more, this will not be probed by Far Side Seismic Suite, but more by South Pole Seismic Suite. So you have to go to the South Pole for potentially detecting ice. And if you want to infer lateral heterogeneities, you need a real network with sensors with about the same performances. And if we want to infer fully what is the core size and internal structure, for sure these two stations will not be enough. We will need also other stations, and we need a real lunar seismic network. Okay, what are the prospects? What are the next seismometers that will be deployed on the moon? So for sure now, next seismometer will be Chinese. It will be Chang'e 7, and it will be deployed close to Shackleton crater. Confirmed, we have Farsight Seismic Suite. It will no more be on Draper iSpace, but we hope to have a landing in 2030. It will be on the far side, on the Schrödinger Basin. So this will be quite new because we did not have any station on the far side. On Artemis 3, now Artemis 4, I think, because they shifted by one mission, we have this LEM seismometer, which is a US seismometer that will be deployed and buried in the ground by astronauts. For Artemis 5 now, because they shifted by one. We have this South Pole Seismic Suite project that was announced as selected and planned for fall 2028. But we recently discovered by CNES will not found the project. So this is a big issue. Why? Because these seismometers, they don't have at all the same performances. Okay, they don't have the same performances, they don't have the same lifetime. The Chinese seismometer has the worst performances, but it will live during at least 5 or 7 years. So it will compensate the fact that its noise level is not as good as we would like by the fact that it will run very long. Okay. The best seismometer is the one of FSS because it's based on the InSight SAIS spare, and this will be the one deployed on the far side. And if you want to put numbers, basically the LEMS seismometer is 10 times more noisy, and the Chinese seismometer is 100 times more noisy than the FSS seismometer. So if we don't have SPSS on the South Pole, we lose a lot of things because this SPSS, the sensor, is equivalent to FSS. It's the best sensor. So if we don't have it on the South Pole, basically we lose a global network because these two sensors will be able to detect globally the quake. And we lose a regional network on US missions, even if we will have also a regional network from the Chinese seismometer. So these are the prospects. I wanted to give a word on other science related to moon seismology. So we will have two very important developments. First, ERC is funding the Listen Flash ERC, which will deploy a network of observatory in order to detect impacts on the moon, because when you have an impact on the moon, you created a flash of light, and so this has been detected a lot, but this network will have the capability to detect this during the day by looking in the infrared. So we will be able to detect a lot of impacts on the moon and to locate them in space and time. So this is really critical for seismology because you have a located source, and the located source is removing a lot of uncertainties on the seismic source. But ESA is also sending LUMIO that will orbit on the far side and see continuously the far side with a camera that will detect impact on the far side. There is also interest of seismology for deployment of gravitational wave detectors on the moon, because the seismic background noise is a noise source for these gravitational wave detectors. There is also an interest in monitoring the micrometeorite flux on the moon, because of course these flash detection telescopes, they can detect flashes, but they will not detect very small impacts. It's better to use a seismometer for that. And there is also a hot topic, which is the thermomechanical properties of the regolith and the detection of in situ resources. So for that, we had news from mainly orbital measurements, and we have now models developed which are saying that maybe you can retain a bit of ice not so deep. So you see here the scale 10 centimeters below the surface. And there are development of active seismic, possibly coupled with ground penetrating radar, to detect this ice. The main uncertainties now are: what is the depth? Is the ice gluing all the grains or not? Because this will change a lot the seismic velocities. If you have the cement between the grain by ice, you're generating very high seismic velocities. Whereas if you don't connect all the grains, you're not increasing so much the seismic velocities. So a lot of questions on this ice detection are currently ongoing. Sorry, it's a bit rude, this conclusion slide, but okay, basically Apollo seismic data, they were processed during 50 years, but they continue to provide new science results. So the current trends favor crustal thickness at the upper end of Grail estimates, and they depict large variations in seismic properties in the crust and the mantle. Deep Mantle and Core remain poorly resolved, for sure. We need new deployment to confirm the model that we are proposed, as well as far-side seismology. So we can say, on the positive side, we can say that SeisInsight created a renew of planetary seismology, but also provided new sensors for the moon, which are the best one to be deployed. The new seismic deployment will be done for sure in the next 5 years. We will have new seismic sensors on the moon, but they will deploy in different conditions, astronaut or not, on the ground, on the lander, with different sensors, with different noise levels. So what we try currently is to gather all these people, all these PI, to try to at least ensure that we have all the information on the data, and to ensure that all this data will be provided to the scientific community. We have, compared to Apollo, we have new observation of impact flashes, and we will have also new geophysical observation on the moon surface that will complement nicely the seismic observation. So we can expect to have a much better image of the internal structure of the moon, not only from seismology, but also from the sensor. And there is a lot of development also on the local subsurface sounding experiment driven by in situ resource utilization. So all these prospects, in theory, at least, are positive for all the development we do here in France.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.